What I love most about culinary history is how deliciousness is created over and over again from difficult circumstances. There's a war or a famine, and people are pushed to move from their home and rebuild a life elsewhere. The food and ingredients are different, but they maintain a familiar taste thread that carries their people forward. London-based chef Farouk Talati is Parsi. He embarked on a project to learn the cooking of his ancestors. His new book tells the story and shares the flavors. Hi, Farouk.
Hi, how are you?
I'm so happy you could join us. Could you start by sharing the Parsi origin story with us?
The Parsi people are a community that follow the Zoroastrian faith, and the Zoroastrian faith is one of the oldest monotheistic religions, dating back nearly 3,500 years now. And around the 7th century in Persia, which we now know as Iran, there was an Arab uprising, and the Zoroastrian community were persecuted, and it was a case of, you know, convert to be Muslim or to leave the country or face an uncertain future. So a group of the Zoroastrians got on ships and they sailed across the Arabian Ocean and hit the shores of Gujarat in India. And over a few decades, they finally found a village to settle in. And they settled in this village in Gujarat, just by a town called Surat. And these people were known as the Parsi people, or those that came from Persia. And that's kind of the beginnings of the Parsi community.
I find the connection so interesting because I've always thought of Indian cuisine and Persian cuisine as being cousins, with the Persian side being very herbal and the Indian side being very spiced.
Absolutely. That's the beauty of Parsi cooking, is the fact that from our origins, we have all this kind of dried fruits and subtle spicing and saffron and rice and pulaos and gently stewed meats. And then when we kind of arrived in India and hit the shores of Gujarat, that kind of melded in with the fish and the coconuts and the harsher spices and chilies. And that's what makes Parsi food so wonderful. It's this gorgeous mix of these two amazing cuisines coming together.
How familiar were you with Parsi cuisine before you embarked on this cookbook project?
Quite familiar. I mean, it's something that's always been in my background. It's always been there as a kid. My first trips to India started at the age of 6, and that's when I was really introduced to who I was, who the Parsi community are in India, and of course, the amazing food and that amazing culture. So it's always been there since a young child, and tasting delicious dishes like the patrani machi, which is the fish steamed with coconut and mango in a banana leaf, and the gorgeous kind of stews and braises like the dansak, the lentil gravy kind of mutton stew, and the amazing rice dishes. So they've always been there in my background. When I lived in London with my mum and dad, the cooking wasn't so Parsi. It was Parsified. My mum will always say that she Parsifies a dish. So, you know, there'd be a subtle nod to it, maybe with some spice mixes that she'd use, or maybe some ingredients that she might have been able to get her hands on. But it was pretty much very European-style cooking at home, but just with these Parsified twists to it, as my mum would say. But then as the years went on and I had more frequent trips to India, my kind of motive on those trips was always to eat as much as I possibly can and discover new foods and go to all these Parsi and Irani cafes and try all the delicious foods and just really immerse myself in all of it.
Tell us about Soho Parsi Curry Night and its inception.
Absolutely. So working as a chef, a friend of mine, Terry, we always used to go and sit outside this cafe in Soho called Maison Berthaud. It's a very old patisserie. I think it started in about 1890. It started, and it's still going to this day. And it's run by this wonderful woman called Michelle. And she's a beautifully kind of charismatic and energetic character. We were sitting outside one day and she was picking our brains, myself and my chef friend, about some dish or the other or something that she could put in her counter. And I heard this music coming from downstairs. And I didn't know there was a downstairs originally. And I said to her, oh, you know, have you got some speakers put in? You know, where's this music coming from? And she was like, oh, no, don't be silly. There's no speakers here. She said, there's a 3-piece jazz band practicing downstairs. And then she grabbed me by the arm and she dragged me downstairs to this very kind of intimate long room painted red with gorgeous art on the wall. And there in front of me was a 3-piece jazz band practicing. And I said to her, you know, this is an amazing room. What do you do here? And she said to me, you know, not much, but I want to start using it more. I want people to come down here more. And we kind of put our heads together and I said, well, why don't I, you know, cook some Parsi dinners upstairs in your kitchen and we can serve them down here. And that's where it all started.
That's such a great story. And from those nights of making these special Parsi dinners, what dish has emerged as being the crowd favorite?
It has to be dansak. Everyone absolutely adores the dansak and rice and all the accompaniments that go with it. It's undeniably tasty. The rice that's been steamed off in caramelized onions and jaggery and caraway seeds is just so savory and fragrant. And the deep, rich gravy of the dansak with the mutton that's been braised in it for hours and hours until it's tender and falls off the bone. So dansak always seems to be the winner there. And second hot favorite is patranimachi, which is a fish baked in banana leaf.
So I think that one of my favorite photos in the book is the one of the large spice grinder, its holding vessel packed with all those whole spices and the powder spilling out. So can you describe the dansak masala? Because it's so unusual and it is such a beautiful way of explaining this merging of Persian and Indian cuisine.
Yeah, it's a very... it's a very complex spice mix, but it's definitely one that's a sum of all its parts. There's about 15, 16 different spices in there, and all in varying kind of quantities as well. And some are slightly obscure, but there's nothing that you can't really get at a good Asian supermarket. I think the dried Persian lime is about as kind of racy as it gets in terms of trying to find an unusual ingredient there. But I kind of refer to it sometimes, like tongue-in-cheek, as just like a curry powder. And I hate that term, to be honest. And I hate the term curry in terms of what is curry. But the most easy way to describe it is it's like a curry powder. But it's so universal and it has so many different uses other than making just dansak. So I make this dansak masala once every few months in a big quantity and I store it in my glass jars. And even as time goes on, it kind of gets this maturity to it and it mellows out and has different kind of characteristics. Every time I make it, it has a different characteristic. Sometimes it's maybe because, I'm shy about 10 grams of bay leaf here, or I've got an excess of cumin seeds, so I just put it in anyway. So it's always got a different character every time it's made. So dansak masala is my kind of all-purpose, everyday spice mix that I use more often than not for things other than making dansak. I think today, in fact, I was speaking to your sound engineer and he was saying, what did you have for lunch today? And I had chips and mayonnaise, but it was a bit more than that. It was chips that were sprinkled with some of this dansak masala and a mango pickle mayonnaise that's in the book. So it has so many different uses.
So now everybody here is going to have to make that blend. And we'll be eating chips with it.
Yeah, it's a great all-purpose seasoning. I did get asked a question once, actually, out of all the recipes in the book, which were you most proud of? Which one would you want people to cook the most? And it's not actually a dish as such. It's the dansak masala, because I truly believe if you do take the time to make this dansak masala, it then opens up so many more doors to you.
Could you talk about the importance of coconut to Parsi cooking and their symbolism in the Zoroastrian culture?
Zoroastrianism uses a lot of symbolism, different fruits, spices, ingredients. Fish, for example, is a symbol in Zoroastrian culture for kind of life. And the time in Persia for the Zoroastrians, pomegranate was used in many of our rituals and prayers as a symbol of prosperity. And when the Parsi people kind of settled in India, pomegranate wasn't so common and it wasn't so easily found to use in these ceremonies, in these rituals and these prayers. So we adopted coconut, and coconut took the place of the pomegranate in terms of our representation of prosperity and kind of life within that culture. So I think that also speaks so beautifully of the Parsi community in terms of how we adopted, how we kind of said to ourselves, well, if we don't have this, let's use this. And you can see that in so many aspects of Parsi culture, and especially the cooking, in terms of, not having what else can we use. And that's how the Parsi kind of culinary history has grown. So when we kind of cross paths with the English in India, the Portuguese and the French, we adopted much of their cooking styles and some of their ingredients and some of their ways of cooking, which you can kind of see in the timeline of Parsi cuisine. And you think to yourself, well, that's unusual. Why is there an egg custard tart that's so pronounced in Parsi cooking? It's because, that time of us kind of mixing with the Portuguese and seeing their egg custards and their use of sweet custards, we loved it and we adopted it. And same with the coconut. So coconut in the Zoroastrian and also the Parsi faith has a prominence there, and it represents prosperity.
This has been such a fun conversation. Thank you so much.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
That's Farouk Talati, head chef at St. John Bread and Wine and founder of Parsi Supper Club. His first cookbook is Parsi. We've got a recipe for his mutton dansak, and yes, the dansak masala recipe is there too. Just head to our website, kcrw.com/goodfood. Want to make sure that you never miss a recipe that you hear about on the show? Then make sure you're following us on Instagram. You'll find excerpts from our segments, links to recipes, and of course, a lot of gorgeous photos of food. Look for all of it at KCRW Good Food and click follow. We continue our Zoroastrian theme in a minute with the story of immigration, assimilation, and finding identity in a jar of thick, creamy yogurt. White Mustache founder Homa Dashtaki is with me next.